This episode, I want to discuss the new movie, Zola. I had heard that this movie took Sundance by storm and it was being released, and to a lot of, not just acclaim, but a ton of buzz. And it has to do with trafficking. And so I called my dear friend, Lauren, with whom I'm about to speak, to ask her if we could have a movie date, a virtual movie date across the country and both go see this movie. Lauren, thank you for being here to discuss this.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for asking me.
It's a joy. Lauren and I are longtime friends. She's another survivor. She has never told her story before, but we thought this was a particularly apropos time. Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah.
So we both went to see the movie, and ironically, about the same exact time. I mean,
yeah, that's so funny. I texted you. I'm like, okay, I saw it.
Oh God, me too. Thank God it's not nighttime. I don't want to go to. I didn't want to go straight to sleep after that.
Yeah.
The movie, as if I were just like a movie goer, I would have a very different experience, perhaps, like filmically speaking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I do. There was something cool about the movie.
It's a really well-made movie. It's well-directed and well-acted and well-written. I actually saw one of the writer's plays on Broadway, Slave Play, and, you know, was like, oh, he's really special, you know? And so all of that factoring in, you know, it's like, you know, you want to, you're like, okay, well, it's a really well-made movie, you know?
It really was. I mean,
with
some of the
really
shots
talented people at the helm, you know?
Yes. And some of the devices they used and the way the shots were put together and structured and the angles, and it was just cool.
Yeah.
Now, that's for me, that was part of the problem. That was perhaps the biggest part of the problem.
Yeah.
Well, one of them there, I want to paint a picture. So I went, it was an empty theater with the exception of, there were two girls in front of me. And I say girls, they were probably 20. Mm-hmm. They were sitting two rows in front of me. I came in late after the previews, or as they were beginning to wrap up. And these two were talking so loudly. It was like they were the only people in the theater. Well, they were at the time.
Yeah.
And so they were like, dang, I don't get to talk full volume. Like, I don't care. I kind of enjoy that sort of thing. But that's who was in the movie. And so I was sitting two rows behind them, kind of watching them, watching the movie. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to paint that picture. So, okay, then the movie starts. What are you thinking?
What am I thinking, me personally, as it started? I went in, I didn't know anything about this whole Twitter threat. I hadn't read any of that. I didn't know about it until I knew about the movie, and then I didn't really research it because I just wanted to see the movie and then I did a little bit of homework. But I mean, it started out and it really like threw you in, and you know, but I did know enough to know where it was going. So I knew the story, you know, I had at least seen the synopsis and I knew where it was going. And you know, being familiar, as we'll talk about in my story, with, you know, meeting that person who seems like, you know, somebody you want to be friends with, who's, you know, got the hookup or the, you know, is like, you know, gonna help you get, you know, advance or you know, meet the right people or all that stuff. Like, I, you know, immediately, that first scene where she meets, what was the name of the character? The one that Riley.
Well, in the movie, she's called She's called Stephanie. Stephanie,
that's right. So when she meets her, you know, immediately I was like, oh boy, this is going to be, you know, like it was like all the different, like the ways that people kind of reel people in
the way they groom them, you mean, or?
Well, the grooming, but there's I forgot that the term, it's like it's a cult tactic too. It's like love bombing, you know, of like, you're so beautiful. You're so this, it's like that whole, you know, that right. Flirting and love bombing, is such a tactic, like a good tactic, especially on a young woman.
I mean, it's very effective. So in the movie, the Stephanie character, who in real life, again, this is based off of these series of tweets Zola made. And there's the Stephanie character, and she's love bombing Zola and inviting her to go to Florida to go strip for the weekend. Mm-hmm. And it's, as I'm watching this story unfold, I mean, I know your story, and it so parallels it. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for accepting the invitation to see the film and have the conversation, but you know, there was something that occurred in the movie that, to me, repeatedly occurred that to me was the most challenging part about the movie. So we both agreed, you know, filmically, it's fantastic. It's, I was like, wow, these girls are so cool. I want to be like them. Oh, wow. Look at, you know, they're sexy. They've got great clothes, great bags, great,
great
dialogue. They're so, so bold and brazen and sassy and sexy and all these things, right? Mm-hmm. That's this dangerous portrayal, because it's not at all consistent with the actual life.
There was something about the way it was shot, the makeup, the wardrobe, the lighting, that was almost comic book like very clean and like there, you know, with all the grit of the topic, everything felt very clean and shiny.
Yes. And the part that I'm referring to that for me was the most dangerous was in the most harrowing of circumstances, specifically where it starts to get violent, we cut away from it.
Yes.
And then I started gathering when they went into the situation where it was the gangbang situation.
Yes.
And it's about to occur. I started no shit grabbing my stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, I got to get my shit and get out of here. I grabbed my shit, stuck it in my pocket, stood up. And then she looks up and they cut into this joke.
I know about her point of view.
Yeah.
I know. And it's really, it was so jarring. It was so jarring. And I felt the same way in that moment. I was like, I went and saw the movie with my husband. And I cannot tell you how absolutely uncomfortable I was sitting next to him watching and going through these like inner experiences that I was going through, you know, sitting next to him. It was really hard. It was like, oh God, you know? And I went through all of that. Like I was ready at that, you know, with the gangbang stuff, I was ready. If we're going to see this, I don't want to see this.
Yeah. And on the other times when it was dark, like the, you know, the first night where there's the 20 men that come in, the 20 Johns.
Yeah.
And it was made comical, like the really old man, and isn't he funny the way he has sex? We see just a funny angle where you just see the old skinny man and the guy with the weird penis.
The crazy penis. Yeah. Like
it's just It's comical. And then even when Z, the guy, the pimp, gets really angry, it then turns funny kind of with the accent change thing. It's in every dark moment, there's levity injected.
Yes.
And I found the most dangerous part about that is it whitewashes.
Yes.
Every piece of it. Or as like you'd said, it kind of turns it into a comic book caricature.
Yes. It turns it into like a graphic novel or something, like a funny graphic novel or something. You know, it becomes not reality. It takes you out of actually the reality of what's really going on. And I know that, this is what I've been thinking about lately. So I know that the whole film I read afterwards that I knew it was based on her tweets and this whole thread. And I know that Zola worked with the writers to get the tone to mimic the thread. You know, that was part of what they were going for. And so that's the tone of the thread too. It's got that kind of like comic, funny. And my question is this, and I mean, if I were ever to talk to Zola, I guess my question would be, the real Zola, is would you have been able, I'm a little emotional when I say this, would you have been able to write that thread and joke about it and make fun and have this movie made if you had actually been forced to do anything sexual yourself? Because it seems like she was able to avoid it, you know, according to the story.
Yeah. Get by unscathed.
And if she had been forced to actually participate in that way, would it be a joke to her? Would she be so apt to go on Twitter and tell this story?
Yeah, I can't even.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I know that, you know, we've talked about our stories and until we healed, and it took decades, we couldn't tell our story to anybody, even each other. You know, we've known each other, you know, like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like it took me a decade to heal, you know?
Yeah.
And now I'm finally able to tell my story. So,
you know, this Stephanie character in the movie lures Zola down to Florida with the story of making a lot of money stripping.
Yeah.
And she makes it seem so glamorous. It's this cool thing we do. Oh, you'll love it. Even when it starts to turn sideways.
Yeah.
And you see that it's not, there's really no money to be made stripping. It's going to have to be hooking. It's a whole different thing. You're going to have to get with these men.
Yeah.
Then it still starts to go sideways. And she's this masterful spinner. Oh, my kid, I don't want him to kill me. I don't want him to. And she's this master manipulator.
Yeah.
And in your own story, there's such a parallel. Will you share how that was with the woman who set up this glamorous world for you that was anything but?
So I'll just real quickly, like just the quick, you know, background. So I grew up in New York City. I, you know, loving family, beautiful, wonder, like seriously, nothing bad happened in my family. Like I didn't come from that place in any way, you know, I got kind of tied up in the whole nightlife club scene of New York City. And I was 17. I had just lost my virginity, you know, a couple months earlier. And I was just starting to model. And I was involved in this club scene in the city, and I started to do drugs. People, you know, I met a lot of grown-up people who kind of started giving me drugs, and I started to do a lot of drugs, and I got very addicted. And I met this woman who was probably, I don't remember exactly, but I think she was, you know, early 20, like 23, 24, probably, and very beautiful. We'll just call her D. And I met her in the club scene, and, you know, and I don't remember how, like, I just met her, and she started to talk to me, and she started doing some drugs with me. We started to kind of, you know, do drugs together and in the bathrooms of the club and exchange numbers. And she invited me over to dinner at her gorgeous loft in Soho. And, you know, you don't have a loft in Soho unless you have a lot of money. And I couldn't figure out how this model, who I had never seen in a magazine before, had all this money, you know? And she, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And she was like, well, you know, while I'm in between my modeling jobs, I have like the best job in the world. And I was like, what's that? And she said to me, there's this woman, we'll call her Danny. That's not her real name, but, I work through, and she, her clients are all like famous people. She listed off these really famous people, like at the time, that she had worked for. And this woman gets her these jobs.
Now, was she calling it like jobs in quotation marks, or was
she said, like, I work for this woman, and she's like a high class madam. I mean, she said that, but she was like, but like all of the jobs I do, like, I don't even have to like do anything really. She's like, this one client has me pee on him in his bathtub, and another client, he and his wife pay me to watch them have sex, and I don't even have to get involved. And she just made it so like glamorous and easy. And she seemed so like normal and unscathed. And she was so beautiful. And I just was like, and she knew all these photographers, and I like did a photo shoot with her, a lingerie photo shoot with her for like test.
Oh my God.
For a photographer. And
when you said that, I was thinking of the movie Zola, when she takes the photos.
Yeah.
Stephanie, the photos of her and Zola. Uh-huh. Do you think Dee was taking those photos for a reason?
I don't know. It wasn't her taking them. It was another photographer. But that,
you know what I mean?
It like could have been. Yeah.
You know, you had a lingerie shoot with her.
Well, and it's even like crazier than that, because as I was talking to another friend of mine from back then, she reminded me that this photographer that took our pictures, he was kind of like an amateur, you know, aspiring fashion photographer that did something else, or he did photographs for something else, but like amateur fashion photographer in the club scene. And I was reminded recently that a friend of mine who was the same age as me, that he took advantage of her when she was on drugs and slept with her. Wow. So like, and he was a lot older. So it's like, this was a crazy world that we, you know, at 17, I found myself in.
Oh my God.
And on drugs and desperate, you know? And so I just kind of like heard it from her a bunch of times, and she kept bringing it up, and she'd tell me about her jobs, and she'd laugh about it, and we'd laugh about it. And it seemed so easy, and she seemed so easy about it. And she's like, anytime you want, I can introduce you to Danny. Like, just let me know if you ever want to do a job, like, you know, I could introduce you. And it got to a point with the drugs for me where I was so desperate. I was in high school, it was in my senior year of high school. And I had sold everything I could sell. I'd like stolen things from my parents to sell. And I called her and she called this woman. And I'm sure, I mean, like, listen, this woman hired me on these jobs sight unseen. So I'm sure she showed her the pictures. You know what I mean? I'd never met this woman. And on a school night.
Oh my God.
I went out and I went to this woman's apartment, not the model, but the madam on the Upper East Side. And she had like a room there that she used for clients when they wanted privacy. And she gave me a lot of alcohol and a lot of drugs to get me like out of my, you know, to get me relaxed because I was terrified. And at this point I had to kind of wrap my brain around it. So the way I had to deal with it, or like the way the only way I could do it was to think to myself, sex has nothing to do with love. They're two totally different things. This is nothing, you know. I might not even have to have sex. Like, this is nothing. And so I got to this woman's house and she gave me all this alcohol and drugs. And then she basically, and my friend was there too.
D,
to work. Yeah. D, not to work, but just to like be there. And I remember her saying, this is like one of my best clients and he's so excited because he knows you're 17 and that you just lost your virginity. And this man came over and he was like old enough to be my dad. And we went into the room and he was incredibly gentle with me and like told me all about his personal life and his marriage. And then, you know, he, you know, did what he wanted with me. And I just laid there and did it, you know, like I let him.
Yeah.
And then when that was done, she said, you guys are going together on another job. Like my friend and I.
Same night.
You guys are going together. I got a job for the two of you. And she had told that client that D was also much younger. And at that job, he was like more into like bondage-y stuff. And I freaked out.
Wow.
And in the middle of him having sex with me, I started to cry. And, you know, of course he didn't want to, like, he was just like, this is not whatever. And somehow I got out of there and I went home on a school night and my mother was like trying to talk to me at the door. And I was like, I just have to like, I'll talk to you in a little while. And I went and I took a shower. My mom came in and she's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm totally fine. I'm just like, I need a shower, you know, before bed. And,
God.
And, you know, spent all the money on drugs and then was like, I'm not going to do that again. And then a year later, I was at this point thrown out of my parents' house because I was such a mess. And like, I was doing so many bad, like I was just, you know, I couldn't do anything like that under my parents' roof. And I mean, I couldn't do all the drugs I was doing. And I was living with two girls from Marseille down in the West Village. I was just crashing with them and I was really desperate. And one night I picked up the phone and I called this woman again to not D, but Danny. I had her number and I called her and she said, And I said, I would like to work. And she said, no. And she hung up the phone. And wow,
that's it.
Just no. And I had always interpreted, well, no, at that point I didn't, it was a mess. But it wasn't until, like, when I told the handful of people I confided to the story as I was healing from it, or as, you know, I ended up getting sober. You know, about a year later, and after that phone call. And when I would tell people the story or recount it, I had left so many things out. And one of the things that I had changed about the story was that this woman, Dani, when I called her, had spared me because she heard the desperation in my voice. And she didn't want to put me through that, which that's the story I told people. And that's what I had convinced myself. When in reality, when I really recounted all of it detail for detail, it's that I cried and ruined the second job and pissed off one of her big clients. And she was like, I want nothing to do with this person. She's going to get me in trouble.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then so it just, So I know. When I saw Zola, I was like, I know this, like, I know this kind of person. Like, I know the person who comes on, like, I'm going to be your friend and we're going to do this. We're going to have fun together and we're going to do this crazy thing. And, you know, this is going to be so cool. This is going to be so much fun. I got your back.
And then to see all of the horrors of the real life stripped from the story, what was your experience in that?
I was angry and frustrated. And like, I felt like, okay, I'm sitting here watching a movie and it's a really well-made film. And that's what kind of messed me up in all of it, because I was like, it's a really well-made movie and the acting is solid. Everything about it, the writing, the acting, the directing is so solid. But the subject matter is deeply, deeply triggering and offensive to me. And I mean, offensive because it's being joked about, you know, or made into something that we're all supposed to laugh about. And to a young person seeing this, you know, a teenage girl who doesn't, you know, yet kind of have that much control over her body or her life or get it, you know, your brain's not fully formed and you've got hormones all over the place. And certainly that's where I was back then, when I was very easily persuaded, including having all the drugs, that layer of it. But my feeling was a young person is going to see this movie and laugh along with the audience and think this is okay, or it's funny, or I'm young, I could do this, I can make money and then just go on with my life. You know what I mean? And like,
I do know what you mean. Cheryl, that's like what happened in this movie theater.
And it took me like a million years, it took me forever to be able to have sex normally and think of it in terms of love, you know? And like, that's a real thing. That's the reality. You don't just jump in, jump out.
People often say things like, and I mean, over the years of commenting on sexual assault and rape and sexual violence, one of the common things I hear, and they bring people in to like argue with me on the news.
Yeah.
It's took what, 5 minutes? Oh, it's 15 minutes. Get over it. Why don't they get over it? It may be 5 minutes, but it's a lifetime. And that's, they may be inside of you for 5 minutes or 15 minutes, but they're inside of your head
yeah.
for a lifetime. And I don't know how much clearer to make that, but you know, you say something about these girls or the people watching it are going to think, oh, isn't that cool? And I can do this and then go on with my life. The two girls sitting two rows in front of me were doing that. At the end of the movie, my phone had been blowing up during the movie. And I'm like, I'm just going to answer a few emails before I like get out to the car. It was hot, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I sat there as the end credits are rolling and the music is playing and they started raising the lights and stuff. And I'm looking at my, I'm on my phone and mm-hmm. these two girls are talking mm-hmm. and they go, the first one goes, so you know what you really need to do? Both girls need to have a gun. And if both of them have a gun, then they'd be okay. And the other one goes, well, but you should just have the guy. First of all, you need to not go on location. You need to just have them come to you and then have the guy at the door, like a security guard, but both girls should still have a gun anyway. And then, you know, I like a good place to do this would be like Vegas. And the other one goes, well, Palm Springs is closer and they gamble. Oh,
Jesus.
I mean, they're using it like a fucking roadmap right here. And I'm thinking, wait. This is one movie theater in the whole country. Mm-hmm. What is going on for people? Because when the guy approached me and that his big friend was standing behind him and he says, oh, come with, are you a model? We can make you one. And I mm-hmm. thought to myself, this is not a good idea, but I am smart and I will figure it out. I'll just figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this whole Zola movie, I kept thinking like, oh, will she figure it out? She can figure it out. Can she figure it out? Can she figure, you know, but there's no figuring out of the mind fuck mm-hmm. that is forever going to go on. Yeah. And it's that when you're, like you'd said about brains not being fully formed, there's something about the logic doesn't line up. Mm-hmm. And one final thing I want to bring together on this whole thing is when I then got to New York and was a model, mm-hmm. there was this photographer who wasn't a fashion photographer. He was famous in a different world. I'm not making this up. He was a movie photographer. I don't know if that's who you're talking about, but I had
we'll talk.
I'm bringing this up because there's just this crazy synergy mm-hmm. and of all this overlap. And I think predators continue to be predators.
Yeah.
And even then, even after I'd gone through what I'd gone through, I thought this guy was huge working for the hugest quintessential New York director. Mm. Oh my God, this is probably not a good idea, but I was introduced to him by my huge agency in New York.
Yeah.
I should just go.
Yeah.
And it ended up being a very bad situation.
Yeah.
And that logic of I'll figure it out when you're still young. And I was 20, 21 at that age, young, too damn young.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like when you're that young, when you're 17 to, you know, early 20s through, you know, any teenage into early 20s, you think that you're invincible. You really do, to some extent. You think like, I can handle it. I can take care of myself.
And the brain isn't finished developing till 25, 26.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can't.
And the hormones, and so, you know, everything. It's like, there's so much going on.
And this movie is being targeted to them.
Yeah.
And I'm hearing them in the theater go, oh yeah, well, we just both need to have a gun.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, I'm mapping it onto my idiocy at that age. Not that everybody's an idiot at that age. And yet you're saying something very true. You think you're invincible. that yeah. is the hallmark of that age.
Yeah.
It just, it seems dangerous to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I was comparing it after I saw it. I was talking to my husband and I was comparing it in terms of some of the aspects of it to that film Spring Breakers, the Harmony Korine film, except that Spring Breakers ends really badly and you get the gravity of the situation. And that's the part in Zola that isn't there. It's like at Zola and it's like, you know, button on the end, everybody's getting out alive and everything's cool. And look at the pretty horizon we're driving off into. And it's like, it just, it's,
even the guy who tries to kill himself yeah. ends up okay with a joke.
Yeah.
It all turned into a joke.
So it's like, you know, oh, it'll all work out in the end. You know what I mean? And it's dangerous. It's a dangerous thing. Like I have a 14-year-old niece. I don't want her to see it. You know what I mean? I don't want, actually she's got more common sense than most adults. So maybe she'd be fine seeing it. But you know, I know a lot of teenagers that just would not be, you know, they would not be.
You, at that age, by and large, don't have self-confidence.
Yeah.
And being able to say a definitive, unequivocal no is predicated yeah. upon having self-confidence and self-assuredness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're finding themselves unable to say no. Uh-huh. It's there's so many complexities of the whole conundrum that this is.
Yeah.
It's, oh man, just the glamorization of trafficking, which is what this seemed like to me.
Absolutely. Especially because the money,
yes,
you know, the, oh, 150, cool, no, clothes. You're going to charge 500. And it's mm-hmm. like, all of a sudden, that's the other thing. It's like Zola, you know, that becomes the twist where Zola almost like starts to become her pimp.
And not even almost.
No, she does. And so, and that becomes like a cool thing. Like it goes back to, would you be joking about this? Would this have ever been a Twitter thread had you been forced to have sex? And that's the part that bothers me about how flippant she is about telling her story and about making fun, you know, poking fun of it. And you know, I don't like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the money aspect is a huge one. It's like, listen, this was a high class madam, I made a lot of money. You know what I mean? Doing these two jobs. And that is very appealing to someone young who doesn't, you know, do you want to work a minimum wage job in a clothing store where you can make all of this money on one, you know what I mean? And to a teenager who doesn't get yet that's like, you're going to be scarred for a great part of your life from this, that reality doesn't hit someone that young. It didn't hit me. I thought I was fine. I would be okay. I remember I had a best friend who needed drugs too. And I was like, I'll take care of this for both of us. Like I really was like, I felt so tough. And so like, I can handle this. I'll be okay. I'm smart and I'm strong. And I, you know, and I was neither.
It's almost verbatim what I said to myself. And it's yeah. you can't really be either at that age.
No, no.
And that's what I fear for is these girls who think that this is now an answer. And mm-hmm. without the dark side painted, it seems very alluring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I found myself watching the movie being two-headed. Okay, there's me as myself, and then just an audience member. Yeah,
same.
Going, well, that's not so bad.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This one has a nice ass. Oh, that's fun how it's done like that. I need a girlfriend. We should go down to Florida. It's like, are you buying into the whole thing? I can see how these girls in front of me are like Palm Springs or Vegas. We just both need a gun.
Well then, and again, back to that moment where she charges 150, and I was like, in my mind, I'm like, that's not enough money. And it's like, wait a minute, you know? And that's kind of the mind fuck of the movie, you know, is that it's, I don't think it set out to be manipulative, but I think it's manipulative, you know? And I think with the wrong audience, dangerous.
Yeah. I was speaking with a woman this week who runs a NGO that is designed to combat slavery in source countries around the world. Mm-hmm. And one of the things she was talking about is they go into these remote villages in the Philippines, these traffickers, or they're already there, and they talk to these women with no economic prospects. Yeah. That there's no work. There's nothing for them.
Yeah.
And they get pregnant young and can't feed their children, and they've got to figure out something. And so they're promised these lucrative jobs if they just go to the Middle East someplace. Yeah. They get there. There's never that job. It's,
of course,
they're trafficked. But so what they do is they're actually providing work training so that they can go and get an actual job in Manila. But one of the things that they're up against is the traffickers are telling them, but you can make so much more money for your family if you just go to Dubai.
Oh boy.
And there's when there's this economic component.
Yeah.
Free will and choice. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
That's a luxury they don't have.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's again the complexities of this. Mm-hmm. And look, neither you nor I are maligning this film or the filmmakers. We both
know
from perspective, think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's just,
and again, I saw one of the writer's plays and just was blown away by it, you know, like when it was on Broadway about a year and a half ago. And I respect the talent of the people that made the movie and the people who acted in it, but it is the subject matter and the story as told that really is so problematic. I would really love to ask Zola, would this have been funny to you if you had actually been forced to have sex yourself?
And
because that's a whole, that's a whole different thing. And it's so crazy,
Yeah, there's nothing funny about that.
No, and I remember when the whole Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell thing was in the news, came out. That was just like, because it was very much that world that I was, like those were the clients, not those two people specifically, but that world of clients. Yeah. And I just was like, oh wow. And I could have been, that could have easily happened. It's like, yeah.
Lauren, thank you for sharing your story today. Thank you for sharing it, period. And thank you for sharing it here.
Thank you for asking me, and thank you for your courage and inspiring me to tell my story.
Yeah, I think each time one of us raises our voice, it makes it possible for somebody else to do the same. Yeah. And I don't think it's possible to walk free from that which you cannot name. Claiming 100%. And naming what we've faced is seminal to healing. So thank you for making it possible for people.
And how beautiful, you know, that we can both sit here today and look at each other and know that we've healed from it.
Yeah.
You know.
Amen. If you or someone you know has been taken for sex trafficking, or you suspect that's happening, call 888-373-7888 or text the word HELP to 233-733. With your help, we can stop human trafficking now. To keep up with all of our latest work, please follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Trafficked Series. Please be sure to rate, review, share, and subscribe to our podcast. I am your host, Cheryl Hunter, and we are here to end human trafficking. So remember, if you see something, say something. This is a Conveyor Media production. Host and creator, Cheryl Hunter. Executive producers, Colin Whelan and Rebecca Sermons. Head producer, writer, editor, Celine Beth Calderon. And music by Mickey O'Brien.